This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
I'm Jeb Burnsod, Editor-in-Chief of Aviation Safety Magazine. With me today is Mike Bush. Mike is not only a co-founder of AvWeb, but he's also the founder of the Savvy Aviator seminar series and SavvyAviator.com, as well as the FAA's Maintenance Technician of the Year in 2008. What we wanted to talk about today is maximizing efficiency. And this is a follow-up to an article in the October issue of Aviation Safety Magazine. The article is kind of a broad-brush approach to some of the things that an aircraft owner and private pilot renter might want to think about when he or she is trying to get more bang for the buck. What are some of the things that can go beyond this article, Mike, specifically perhaps in the areas of flight planning or actually operating the airplane?
Well, that's interesting, Jeb, because when I read the article, I kind of assumed you wanted me to talk about maintenance, but when I read the article, it occurred to me that probably the most significant thing to talk about were the operational issues of just how you fly the airplane efficiently, because that tends to have a much more profound effect on efficiency and fuel economy than the maintenance issues do. And really, the rules for extracting the best efficiency out of the airplane are really pretty simple. And I'll bypass the issue of what you're carrying. Obviously, if the lighter you fly, the more efficient
absolutely
your plane is. That you're carrying what you need to carry, and you're carrying the amount of fuel you need to carry. And so our objective here is to try to get the best fuel efficiency out of the airplane and also reasonable performance out of the airplane. Yeah. So let's start with a couple of basics. One is that the engine is most efficient when it's operating at wide open throttle.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about what a throttle does, it basically chokes the engine. Part throttle is intentionally induced engine inefficiency. And the way I fly my airplane is I go to wide open throttle on takeoff, and I never touch the throttle until a few minutes before I touch down.
That's basically the same way I do mine.
And I wouldn't touch the throttle even then, except I haven't figured out a way to land the airplane at wide open throttle. But basically, the rule is that any time you're not taxiing or landing, the throttle ought to be wide open.
Okay.
Because part throttle is highly inefficient. The second rule is that for cruise flight, you want the RPM to be relatively low because propellers are more efficient.
Now, let me interrupt you and ask you a question. If I'm flying a fixed pitch prop on, say, a Skyhawk, how can I do both? How can I have a wide open throttle and control my RPM?
If you're flying a fixed pitch prop, you can't control your RPM except by going to the prop shop and bend the prop. And of course, if you have a fixed pitch prop, as you know, Jeff, you can buy a climb prop or a cruise prop. And presumably, if you're interested in efficiency, you're going to want to buy a cruise prop.
Right.
But for the sake of this discussion, let's assume that we have an a constant speed prop,
since
otherwise we can't do anything about it. And if we have a constant speed prop, we want to cruise at relatively low RPM.
Mm-hmm.
So we want wide open throttle, and we want low RPMs. Now let's talk about airspeed for a minute. The most efficient airspeed, which is actually a point called max speed over drag.
Mm-hmm.
You can derive it by drawing a drag curve and drawing a tangent line from the origin of the graph. But when you do that, what you get is a 1.316 times the minimum times the max L over D,
mm-hmm.
which for all intents and purposes is your best rate of climb speed. So if you know your best rate of climb speed and you multiply it by 1.316, that's the speed you'd like to cruise at, indicated.
Okay.
So, for example, for my airplane, my best rate of climb speed is about 105 knots in my Cessna 310.
Right.
So my best speed versus drag is just slightly shy of 140 knots indicated.
Mm-hmm. Which for your 310 is going pretty slow.
Well, it's not.
Well, at altitude it's not. At altitude, you're right.
You fly a Devonair,
right.
And I'm guessing your best rate of climb speed somewhere around 90 knots.
Something like that,
ballpark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So your best speed versus drag would be 120, roughly indicated,
mm-hmm.
ballpark. Okay. It's not important to get super precise about
right.
this number, because when you draw the graph, you'll see that the tangent line approaches the curve very flatly, and so it's not super critical to be exactly on, but you want to be somewhere in that ballpark. Now, the question is, how are you going to fly at 120 knots in your airplane, 140 knots in my airplane indicated, with wide open throttle?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, you're going to do it up high.
Exactly right.
And because when you do it up high, get all sorts of free speed. Now, your airplane is normally aspirated.
That's correct.
And so you would probably achieve all these numbers, you know, somewhere up around 13,000
mm-hmm.
feet. And that's actually not a bad place to go, because it's also the highest you can go without sticking a tube up your nose.
Mm-hmm.
In my airplane, which is turbocharged, I get that optimum thing in the low 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever kind of airplane you fly, doesn't matter. It all comes down to the same basic set of rules. You fly wide open throttle, you fly low RPM. How low the RPM is a function of what your engine's operating envelope permits on the low end. So in my airplane, the low end is 21 to 2200 RPM.
Right.
I'm not sure where it is on your Bonanza, but it's probably 2200.
Yeah, the green arc on the tack is constant. It's uninterrupted from idle to full open.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you look at, if you've got an IO 520, if you looked at the mm-hmm. Continental IO 520 operating manual,
mm-hmm.
They have a graph in there that shows the permissible range of cruise power setting.
Right, right.
And it won't let you operate at, you know, 25 inches and 1,000 RPM. It just you could do that anyway.
Yeah.
But you basically want to be at the low end of the acceptable range of RPMs. You want to be at wide open throttle. You want to be at an airspeed that is, at 1.316 times your best climb speed, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, best L over D, but that's close enough. And you want to be at a high altitude, which, in order to make all those other things happen, you have to be at a high altitude. Otherwise,
right.
you couldn't be at wide open throttle and do that. So it all sort of puts you in a really, you know, in a fairly well-defined place to get maximum.
Now, of course, some of our listeners, some of our readers might think, well, you know, I got a 170-knot airplane. What am I doing with 120-knot indicated? And, of course, the punchline is, by climbing high, your true airspeed is going to be increased.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, of course, anybody who flies a turbo knows that in spades.
Mm-hmm.
The airplane is vastly more efficient up at high altitude. Now, here's another interesting thing, and I play around with this a lot. I have in my airplane, and quite a lot of people do have something similar, but I have a shade and fuel totalizer.
Right.
In my airplane. And lots of people have shadens and JPI flows, fuel scans, and things like that. And those, digital fuel flow instruments typically have a mode that lets you actually display nautical miles per gallon, mm-hmm. or on my instrument, it's nautical miles per pound of fuel, mm-hmm. but a fuel efficiency figure. And if you have an instrument like that, it's really quite instructive. Sometime on a nice long cross country when you've got nothing better to do, then to start playing around with different airspeeds and different power settings and different mixtures, with the objective to try to optimize that number on the readout.
Right.
And of course, when you make a change, you have to set for several minutes while everything stabilizes and you get a new number. But when you start doing that, you get a really good feel for this stuff, and you quickly find out that all of these basic rules that I just kind of went through about wide open throttle and low mm-hmm. RPM mm-hmm. and high altitudes and a speed somewhere around 1.3 times your climb speed all really work very well in optimizing that number.
Okay. That's not something I've tried with my airplane, but I will do that soon.
Well, I fly a lot of very long missions.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, week after next, I have to fly to Lexington, Kentucky for the Bonanza.
Right.
And I'm making a stop in Kansas City to meet with the FAA. Now, Kansas City is about 1,300 nautical miles from Santa Maria, where I'm based, which is normally beyond the range of the airplane. But I recall about 2 years ago where I flew from Santa Maria to Kansas City nonstop in the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a just to see if it could be done kind
right.
of a deal,
Right.
And it was done in the winter when the tailwinds were
sure.
really good at altitude. And it was done at flight level 230,
mm-hmm.
which is actually quite high for my airplane. The indicated airspeed makes it look kind of like a very expensive Skyline up there. and it was done, obviously wide open throttle,
uh-huh.
very low RPM, mixture lean of peak, just to the very edge of flame out, and made it nonstop, 1,300 nautical miles, landed at Kansas City International, and had an hour and 5 minutes of reserve
wow.
in the tank. So, on a trip like that, it's kind of that's the time that you really start to play with these things, because you need to milk every last little drop of efficiency
mm-hmm.
out of the airplane.
Mm-hmm. How do you plan a flight like that?
Specifically on that flight, it was funny, that particular flight, I was going to an FAA meeting with John Frank,
uh-huh.
and I met him at the airport at 6 a.m., and I said, John, I was planning the flight last night on the computer, and if everything works exactly right, it looks like we might just be able to make it nonstop to Kansas City. You want to go for it? And he said, sure, why not?
So you better go to the bathroom now.
But that's a whole other podcast. How do we go to the bathroom on a six-hour flight? First of all, I planned it on the computer. I had the calculated times at all different altitudes, assuming that the wind's law forecasts were correct, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it indicated that we wanted to be real, unusually high for my airplane, 23,000 feet, which is higher than I normally fly, because it's way, way above the fastest speed for the airplane under normal circumstances.
Right.
But the winds were so favorable. But the other thing you need to have is a whole bunch of Plan B, because this is clearly right at the edge of the envelope.
Right.
And if the winds don't turn out exactly as planned, or some other parameter wasn't predicted exactly right, or God forbid ATC throws you something unexpected, you need to know exactly where your bailout points
mm-hmm.
are. And with a fuel totalizer coupled to a GPS that's constantly recomputing your estimated fuel upon touchdown, you just are constantly watching to see whether it looks like you're okay or not. And as that bingo fuel number starts heading down towards your personal minimums. For me, it's 200 pounds of fuel. I always want 200 pounds of fuel when I land.
Right.
You start thinking about those Plan Bs real seriously. And it's worth mentioning now that I think of it is that if by doing all of this stuff and doing all the proper planning and all the stuff we were just talking about, if you can omit a fuel stop, that's a huge
amount of savings. It absolutely is.
The amount of fuel you use to do a takeoff and climb is just horrendous.
It is.
And if you can avoid an extra takeoff and climb, I mean, that's... One of the ways this came up is that when avgas prices started getting up above $5, I started to get, you know, started to fixate a lot on you know, air nav and fuel prices and stuff. And there's this real tendency never to pass up an airport with cheap fuel, you know, without landing and filling all the possible orifices. But it turns out that if getting the cheap fuel causes you to make a stop you wouldn't otherwise have made, the fuel has to be unspeakably cheap before it actually saves you money.
Exactly right.
Because it costs so much to do that stop. My airplane on takeoff is using 360 pounds per hour. In Lena Peak Cruise, it's cruising at 150 pounds per hour.
Sure.
Using well over twice what the fuel on takeoff and climb.
That mine is...
Possibly avoid that. That's a big deal.
Mine's doing about 29 gallons per hour on takeoff. I use gallons per hour, you use pounds per hour.
Right.
And when I'm in cruise, I'm down around, you know, 12 and a half.
Sure.
And, yeah, it's horrendous. And I get almost physical sometimes with passengers. You want to stop. Why? And no.
There is that paper cup back there.
Yeah, there is that paper cup back there. But it costs real money.
Mike, thank you very much. Mike Bush, co-founder of AvWeb, founder of the Savvy Aviator Seminar Series, and the FAA's 2008 Aviation Maintenance Technician of the Year. This is Jeb Burnside, Editor-in-Chief of Aviation Safety Magazine. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.